Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 3 Adhikarna 3 Transcendental Attributes of Bhagavan Anucheda 50 Page 68 Verses describing the Lord as having, not having hands or feet are in reference to the Lord with an infinite form of self-manifesting bliss. Though you have no material senses, you are the self-effulgent sustainer of everyone's sensory powers. The devatas of material nature herself offer you tribute, while also enjoying the tribute offered them by their worshippers, just as the subordinate rulers of various districts in the kingdom offer tribute to their Lord, the ultimate proprietor of the land, while also enjoying the tribute paid them by their own subjects. In this way, the universal creators faithfully execute their assigned services out of fear of you. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:87-28. The meaning is this. Just as an axe impelled by the powers of an agent performs its task of cutting and is different from the agent, the sense, karna, is a substance which has accepted the function of a sense organ. It does not have this function as its nature. Similarly, an object is capable of burning another object because it accepts the power of burning. It is a secondary feature of a substance. The word svarat means ultimately the srup shakti, which is operating by itself. Svena from swa. Since the jiva is conscious and the hands, feet, and other senses are unconscious, the jiva's senses are shaktis different from jiva and dependent on the jiva. The jiva, because he is attached to the senses, is called sakarna. You, the antayami, because you are not attached to the senses and are not dependent on them, are called akarana, since you preside, rajase, rat, bayasu, shaktis, sva. Even at the final time of final devastation of the Lord's senses remain. Because he's not attached to the senses, he's not dependent on the senses for their functioning. Right? Because he's the source of them. He's the source of everything. So that's why then he's saying he's akarna, means, or he doesn't have senses, he doesn't perform action, he doesn't. Does that make sense? Because it's in comparison to us. We perform action. Right? Because we're dependent upon the things around us. But Krishna is not dependent, so that's why it says he doesn't perform action. Yes.
What does it mean we attach to the senses and he's not?
Because for us, it's our identity, it's how we get things done and all that. So we're dependent upon the sense itself for the functioning, while the sense is inherently him.
So
he's not dependent upon it, it's himself. See, we're dependent on something other than ourselves. Because the sense, the body, the potencies behind it aren't us. They're separate from us. But for Krishna, they're non-different from him. They are him. So he's not dependent upon them because they are him.
So attached and dependent in this sense are the same.
Yes. Right? So the point is, since it's him, he's not attached. Right? It's just him. So that's why he's not attached to anything in the creation, because it's all him. See, we're attached to something other than ourselves. Is that what it means? Yeah. So that's just the nature. Shakti is attached to Krishna, you know, because he's the Shaktiman. So that's the natural position. So the difficulty comes up is when we don't understand that fact. And so we think that we're becoming attached to some external feature when it's actually Krishna. So. We Shrutis, who generally see you as all-pervading, will achieve the same nectar from your lotus feet that your consorts are able to relish because of the loving attraction to your mighty serpentine arms. For you look upon us and your consorts in the same way. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.23. The learned Shrutis describe his various spiritual senses, including his arms, which support them, but also describe the Lord as Akarana, without senses, since he does not have senses like the jiva. Right? Because the point is who's the discussion for? Right? It's not, the discussion's not for Krishna's benefit. It's for our benefit. So it has to be in the context of our perception. Right? So that's why it's then presented in this way. Why? He exists by his sarup, which manifests his senses through his sarup shakti, swarat. They cannot be called senses like those of the jiva, since they arise from a sarup. How could you manifest yourself independently, swarat, by conditional objects? Right. So he's independent, so it can't be from something that's already expanded from him and then being dependent upon that. Because he's the source of it. Right? He's producing the senses, so he's not dependent upon them because he himself produces them.
Can we say that we don't produce anything as such? That's why we're always dependent on everything?
Yeah, we don't produce anything. Like that. We exist, but we're not producing anything. Like that. So we have our nature. So whatever the qualities in that are there, that you could say is inherent in us. But the problem is that because of our size, we become covered. So even though we have inherently, you know, good qualities and all these things, that becomes covered by the material energy, and then we function in that capacity of material energy. So the Lord is complete bliss, without old age, is the oldest and a single being. Though seen in many forms, there is no variety at all. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.19. Right, so there's no variety because it's just him. So it's the variety here means it's something separate. Right? Because for us, variety means it's different. But for Krishna, all the variety is still him. So in this way you can say there's no variety because it's non-dual. But at the same time you can still identify that it has a particular characteristic. But these are all aspects of Krishna's unlimited characteristics. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes. So can we say that duality arises because of attachment? Then we see things separate?
Attachment or detachment is just due to ignorance. There would be more. Because you can also, you know, be repulsed by something because you see the difference, or, you know, or you can see a difference, you don't care, you know, so it's due to the avidya shakti. So that aspect is what is causing all this. So, yeah. Right, so the important thing to understand from this, because that's why it's being discussed in the Bhagavad Sundarbha. You're dealing with the impersonal aspects, right? Because everything's coming from him. So that just means the potencies are expanding. That's the impersonal aspect. But where are those coming from? They're coming from the person. That's the whole point, is that you understand his supremacy is himself, the person. It's not something else. Does that make sense? Right, so it's not that the impersonal is original, it's the person's original. The Lord is a form without fault, the Lord is a form with faultless perfect qualities. He is independent. He is devoid of the qualities of the material body. His hands, feet, face, and belly are all bliss. He is devoid of internal difference everywhere. Narad Pancharatra. Shamshaya. What is the proof of existence of these Surup Shaktis, Uttara? You give the sense organs and their Shaktis to all beings. Akila Karana Shakti Dharaha. Since you maintain the senses in those beings, this means that those Shaktis are self-accomplished, complete and indestructible in you. Pranasya Pranam Ut Chakshushas Chakshuhu. You are the prana of the prana and the eye of the eye. Kena Upanishad 1:2. Svabhaviki Jnana Bala Kriya Cha. The Lord possesses natural Shaktis of Jnana, Bala, and Kriya. Sweetas and Pratara Upanishad 6:8. Within the body of Mahavishnu reside clusters of millions of universes composed of three planetary systems. By the Lord's senses, the action and knowledge senses of the jivas arise. Right? Because the Lord has senses, that's why we have senses. Right? So our senses arise from Him. So that you have the 10 senses and the mind, that's because the Krishna has this. Right? So our senses are just an aspect of His. Right? Our perception or knowledge is just an aspect of His. Right?
Right. The existence, they are having doubts about the existence of this Svarup Shaktis. What does it mean?
Because they're going
to...
Basically is that... It means personalists aren't going to have the doubt. Right? It's the impersonalists who have the doubt.
Yeah.
Because the impersonalists accept the aspect, the context, concept of the Supreme. But they want to say the personal feature is expanding from the impersonal. That's why it's so important about the Bhagavad Sandarbhas. You're establishing the Lord as the Supreme. So that means it's all pervading in all these, you know, impersonal contexts. But it's coming from the person. That's why you see it's always talking about the Supreme aspects and the person. But it's not bringing up so much or very rarely about Paramatma. Right, that'll be the next sandarbha, how he's controlling all those energies. Right, here's just showing that the energies, the impersonal aspect is there, the supreme aspect is there, but that's coming from the person. So their point is they're trying to take it that the person comes from the material energy, rather than the other way around. Right. It's still a fault because they're going to argue. See, they're presenting a bogus point and then arguing over it. When the point is, where do these... Okay, if there's an energy, material energy and all that, everything's Brahman. So nothing's not Brahman. So therefore you have the material energy. Where did it come from? Because if it has to be... If everything's Brahman, it also has to be Brahman. But because they have a very limited understanding of transcendence, therefore, it's not transcendental as such. It has temporariness, it's ignorance, all that. So they'll say it's not Brahman. But if everything's Brahman, where did this come from? How is it just appears on its own? So if Brahman is the all-powerful being, what potency is produced in energy? Because energy comes from energetic. So who's the second energetic? That's why even though they claim to be monists, they're actually dualists. Right? Because they'll say there's something else. So this point they don't want to discuss. So they'll say Bhagavan, therefore it has come from material energy, because anything with form and this and being able to describe comes from there. But you're describing Brahman also, so does that mean Brahman is illusion? So they'll say, no, it's beyond that. So then why can't the Lord be beyond that? So it's just they have their context where they just want to say there's nothingness, that's all. And whatever's getting in the way of their understanding of nothingness, then that's a problem. They don't want to know where that problem's come from. You know, why is it we're subject to illusion? That they don't want to know. They don't want to know who we are, where we're from. They just want to get rid of the illusion, because by getting rid of the illusion, then it's a, you know, just be like this. Let us say there's a person who is really giving you trouble, right? And let's say they're giving you trouble, so therefore, you know, certain aspects of taking care of your family is interrupted, right? So you want to get rid of this person as a problem, right? But now, you know, it's but and as long as you can keep it impersonal, it works really well. But now if it gets personal, that you understand that they're having a big problem taking care of their family, and that's why they're dealing in this way to try to get rid of that, it means you've decided you're going to do something. But that doing of something is affecting their family. And so their response is now affecting your family. You just want to get rid of them. So as soon as you bring up it's affecting their family and their person and that, then you have to deal with it in a different way. You understand? So that's why for impersonalism, it's such a popular philosophy, because you don't have to actually deal with things in a personal consideration. It's just you and everything else is impersonal. Then it makes it really easy to deal with. So that's why basically any philosophy other than Vaishnavism fits into very comfortably into the category of impersonalism.
The dealings in the Western world and in India are so different.
Yeah. So that's the element, is that, you know, it's like if you want to make things work, you have to bring it to the personal. Right? It means to actually work. But it seemingly work, it works very nicely as impersonal. So that's the thing. So that's why then the philosophies, they always try to keep that impersonal aspect. Right? You know, it's just like God is a person as long as he's providing everything I want. Right? But if we get into it, to go beyond that point, well, who is he as a person? That's then when we'll switch into impersonalism.
Yes.
Because if God's a person, then being a person, that means he has his own particular interests. And God would be, you know, has this whole creation. Why as a person would he be doing it? We don't want to know about that. All we want to know is what benefit we can get. So you see, is that if I'm benefited, then he's a person. You know? But going beyond the specifically, you know, the doubts about my benefits, if that's actually the ultimate benefit, that's when we switch into impersonal. Because then the generic, then you don't have to, if you go into generic, then no one's going to look at you personally too much. Right? But, you know, we're dealing, God's a person, he's so kind, he's so merciful, and why? Because he's taking care of you. Because we say that when things go good. When things don't go good, we don't necessarily use those terms, right? So that's the thing, is that for our own advantage, we'll switch between personal and impersonal. You know, just like if it's a political platform, it's individuals we appreciate, we deal with them personal. The ones we don't appreciate, we deal with them as impersonal.
Yes.
Right, so that's what's going on. So, the Vedas is establishing is Krishna is a person. Therefore, we're a person. He has senses. That's why we have senses. We have he has desire. That's why we have desire. You know, he has action. That's why we have action. But at the same time, it's because we only know material action. Then his. You know, activities and interests and endeavors are not like ours. So therefore we'll say he doesn't have any. Right? Because for us, the inherent thing is material. So then we say, no, you can't do any material things. So that's why then we talk about spiritual. But then the misunderstanding is, okay, then we don't engage ourselves. Just like, let us say, you know, the typical discussion. We're talking about dependency on Krishna. You know, it's like, let's say we're just, you know, Prahlad Maharaj or someone that's full surrender to Krishna and like this. So then, you know, Prabhupada's talking about, let's say, the householder, that they are, you know, they should fully surrender to Krishna, depend upon Krishna, right, for everything like that. They shouldn't be thinking that I am getting all these things and I separately can do all these things and everything like that. So that aspect is being brought up as a matter of surrender, as a matter of perspective. Right? So, if we're looking at the personal, then we understand is that I don't do something for my... I, as a person, don't make endeavors for my own personal benefit. I just do it for Krishna's. And then Krishna, because he naturally, in that relationship, he reciprocates that. Right? We're not doing it so he reciprocates. We're doing it, you know, so, you know, out of that selfless affection for him. But now... the default setting, generally speaking, is that, you know, then, you know, a hand will go up and says, you know, but as grihasthas, we have, you know, we have responsibilities. We have to take care of our family. We can't just sit around and do nothing. But whoever said do nothing? Said depend upon Krishna. Why is dependent on Krishna? Nothing. Because that's their idea. I do nothing. I pray, and then I do nothing. Right? Or I meditate doing nothing.
Buddhist.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So there's this whole thing is that as soon as we say engage in spiritual like that, then we think materially the senses aren't engaged. That's coming from impersonalism. That's why you see it's such a big difficulty to establish this culture of Krishna consciousness, you know, in its application in all aspects of life. You know, the religious aspects, you know, the varnashram, the economics, the personal dealings and all that. Because we have an idea, we only understand as material as action, as spiritual as non-action. Right? Means actually physically you do nothing. Rather than it's non-action because it's not within the realm of karma. Right? So we're taking action and reaction as karma. So bhakti is akarma. It's outside of that. But it's taken that, well, then I do nothing. I don't have to do anything. I just sit back. And then, of course, as part of my doing nothing is I can, you know, sit around and watch TV and eat things and talk to people on the phone and, you know, just do stuff that I like to do. That's doing nothing. But somehow or another, we're not able to translate that into the spiritual position. That doing nothing means engaging in service to Krishna and for his pleasure. So that's the meaning of the nirvise shunyavadi, paschatadeshita. It's so permeated with impersonalism that we don't it's not able to function. Right? Because when we say us and them, us is personal, them is impersonal. Yes.
Some Muslim philosophers, they name it as belief. They are impersonal, but they consider that God has shaktis. They call it emanation. That God created this world and living beings. And can we say that they, because they don't have problem of dualism, they also recognize energies of God. Their philosophy higher than monism.
Yeah, you could say it is, but at the same time, it's ultimately they're going to get to an impersonal position. They're just willing to take that in. They're willing to accept a further degree of personal. So yes, you can say it's a higher understanding, but that actually fully understanding God as a person means, in other words, they're never going to get beyond, let's say, the Paramatma level. They're not going to accept God as a person who has his own desires and therefore we're supposed to interact with him. You understand? Based on that. Because we're looking at, means you're a proper religious person and then that will be rewarded with going to heaven. And in heaven, what's it about? It's about us enjoying. There's no discussion of interaction with God. The only time it talks about interaction with God is literally within, you know, a few verses in the creation in the first page. You know, that's all. It mentions that Adam and Eve are walking with God. You know, and God gave them, you know, everything there, you know, like this. And that's it. But when it talks about, you know, you be good and go to heaven, it never talks about interacting with God again. It just doesn't. It's just not part of the discussion. So they're not actually getting fully up to that platform. And we can understand there is that because even the Paramatma aspect of Bhagavan, you go to Vaikuntha, it's not even getting to there. So it's just getting to the heavenly planets. So they accept God and accept he's in control. And all that, but only for as much as it brings them to the platform of heavenly enjoyment. So you can say it's higher than the impersonalist, like that, on one level. But on another level, then it's not so developed. So you want to take whatever you have, so in other words, in discussions, wherever you have something like that you can work with, emphasize that point and try to apply that in everything so you expand their consciousness. So.
If it was possible to create impersonal philosophy more higher than monism, why Shankaracharya has given this monistic philosophy?
Because he's preaching to Buddhists. Right, because Buddhists, there's nothingness. So, in other words, if you're going to bring them into the Vedic, then you have to. Why do you value something or not? If you're being actual properly philosophical in that, right? It's because of the authority, right? So the scripture. So now they're basing their philosophy on the Buddhist scripture, because Buddha said, "Forget the Vedas." So they have their own doctrine, right? So now, if you want them to eventually take back up the Vaishnava understanding, then you have to get them to accept the Vedic version. Right? So now, you're just presenting Buddhism from the Vedic version. Right? And so, therefore, now they're accepting the Vedas, and because of accepting the Vedas, now, then there's discussion that now you could take it within the Veda and take it further to discuss and establish the Vaishnava position. Mm-hmm. Like that. So that's why I use that method. And people are, you know, nowadays very happy with that, because everything being void works for pretty much everybody.
Does it mean that Buddhistic philosophy is lower than Abrahamic tradition?
You could say, because then it's just atheistic. So atheism is always going to be lower than theism. Does that make sense? So then, and of atheism, atheism that accepts the Vedas is going to be better than atheism that doesn't accept the Vedas. Right? And then within the theistic, then that which accepts the Vedas is going to be better than that which doesn't. That's why you see the person, let's say, the Kali worshipper, is in a better situation than, let's say, someone following the Abrahamic. Because they actually have an access to the fuller understanding and practice and lifestyle of, you know, of that. But then within that, then those who understand the impersonal, that higher than that's going to be understanding Paramatma, higher than that's going to be understanding Bhagavan. Does that make sense? Like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something on that?
Yes. So generally, like what Shankaracharya gave is a perverted version of Uttara Mimamsa. But anybody who talks about, who recognizes the energies of God, they all come only after Purva Mimamsa philosophy. They don't enter to Vedanta. That's why always he still stands on a higher position when it comes.
Okay, right, philosophical. Okay, does that make sense? Means it's an atheistic view, so in that way it's lower. But at the same time, as far as philosophy goes, then it's higher because. Let's say that again. Because he's accepting the Uttara Mimamsa, the Vedanta philosophy, while here they may be accepting God and his energies, but they're only accepting up to the point of maximum Purva Mimamsa, or the karma, Jaimini. That's what I was saying. They just want to go to the heavenly planets. That's all Jaimini is trying to get. Like that. So even there, let's say at later life in Vanaprastha Sannyas, that they absorb themselves in Brahman, they're doing that as an element of karma, that by that piety, that will get into the heavenly planets. So you see sometimes the karmis are talking heaven, and sometimes they're talking Brahman. It's just a matter of where you are. Right? The brahmacharis and the grihastas, then it's about the heavenly planet. Vanaprastha sannyas, then it has to be about the liberation. But they're only practicing that because it will get them to the heavenly planets. So in that way, then, you can say is they don't go above Dharma. Right? So they don't get up to Vijnanamoy. They don't understand that they're not the body and all that. But they're the soul. But what that identification of the soul is. Does that make sense? So philosophically, you could say the impersonalists are in a better position, because philosophically we'll have the same opinion up to that point of liberation. You understand? But as far as karma goes, as far as action goes, you know, the Dharma aspect, then those who are, you know, theistic are in a better position than the impersonalists. Because the problem with the impersonalists, they can't accept that engaging the senses is spiritual. So even though they have a higher philosophical understanding, they can't apply it actually for a real spiritual endeavor. They can only apply it for impersonal endeavor. So that's why somebody from a background of karma generally will be in a better position to practice bhakti than someone from an impersonal background. So we're making this discussion is that basically everyone is impersonal. It's just a matter of, you know, how impersonal. You know, is it identified as impersonal? Because most people won't identify themselves as impersonal. That's why, you know, now in discussing the Sundarbha, we see that everything other than Vaishnava is impersonal. But generally speaking, before this, we would take it that only the Mayavadis are impersonalists and everybody else is personal. But actually, no. Only the Vaishnavas are personal. Everybody else is impersonal.
Yes.
You understand? So therefore, you have the aspect of philosophy and the culture. Does that make sense? So then, in the culture, you're accepting the Veda, then that establishes you properly in Dharma. Then the impersonalists, because of their philosophy, the Uttara Mimamsa, then they'll go up to the next level of Vijnanamaya. Right? While the Karmis won't. Does that make sense? So, religiously, then you'll say that, but then the philosophy goes higher. But, because of their angle in philosophy, they're not able to accept those aspects of a religion that are useful in Krishna consciousness. They can accept the renunciation part, the knowledge part, but they can't accept engaging the senses. You know, they'll think is, you know, we're, you know, cleaning and doing the temple and running around and all this kind of things in the temple. What, you know, I could get so much more spiritual benefit if I just sat down and read or just did meditation or some, you know, yoga asanas. You know, you get individuals like that. That's why it's easier to preach through yoga than it is to actually preach Krishna consciousness. Because yoga, what are you doing? Right? If you're doing nothing, that's easier than you're engaging yourself. Because the point is I'm engaging myself to make profit. That's driving me nuts, so I do a little yoga so that I don't go nuts. But it's not that they're saying, I'll make no profit. I just don't want to go nuts making my profit. Right? Because if they're at a yoga studio, they're doing their yoga, their 20 minutes, their 40 minutes, whatever it is. And that's it. And the rest of the day, they're doing karma. Right? And if they weren't doing karma, they wouldn't be at the yoga studio. Why? Because you have to pay serious money to be at that yoga studio. Right? Because the yoga studio is not out in the bushes somewhere. It's right in the middle of the city. What are the rents right in the middle of the city? What's the rents for a room big enough for 50 people to do yoga? Right? It's ridiculous. So who pays for that? The people in the leotards, right? Does that make sense? So they have to be making money. So they're not giving up the idea of karma. They just add the yoga in so that they are peaceful doing their karma. You understand? So we're not saying, so then in devotional service, you're not doing that karma. You're doing things for Krishna. And then because of that, you're peaceful. You don't have to do the yoga asanas.
Devotion.
Right.
Revolution.
Yeah. So then you'll see many, they can't relate to that. So I've seen people who have come in from the yoga preaching. Even though it was done in a very nice way and they became serious devotees, they chant and all that, they're still very attached to yoga. Like that, they still go to yoga. See, and it's not yoga things necessarily that devotees are doing. It's whoever's, you know, considered to be, you know, high grade, you know, yoga teacher within the yoga circuit, even though they're a karmi. They'll go for those and this and that. You know, and they'll chant. I mean, our devotees will chant and read and all that, but they're still attached to that whole yoga and that kind of thing. Does that make sense? So it's considered that that's creating the peacefulness and all these things like that, rather than the chanting and serving Krishna without desire. So, in other words, it's desire that creates anxiety. You give up material desire, there's no anxiety. But they're thinking it's the yoga that creates peace. No, it's knowing Krishna as the proprietor, Krishna as the friend, Krishna. That's what makes peace.
So can we say even though those people become devotees, not only from yoga, but, you know, psychology and everything. So we say that now devotees, when they come, they have kind of specific groups or something affected by this. It means they were not preached the pure bhakti, or they didn't take the pure bhakti, or what
could be either. You have to just see what's there, because Krishna is going to put you in contact according to your interest, right? So the point is you have people that, let's say, come to that yoga thing just because they're into yoga, they saw the advertisement, it looked interesting, they came. But in that, they became attracted by the devotion, by the kirtan, by the devotional aspect. They talk with the devotees and all that. And then they move into the temple, you know, or take up that direct service and all that. And so then yoga doesn't become quite as important for them, you know, other than if it's something they do as exercise, you know, instead of running on a treadmill, they do some yoga or something. So it's a whole thing. Or others can just go on the yoga circuit. They come to the kirtans. They'll come to our kirtans. They'll come to any yoga studios doing kirtans, even if the people doing kirtans aren't coming in sampradaya. They don't care. They just go to... You know what I'm saying? So that agyata sukriti is there from coming in contact, but it doesn't create that faith. So it's very individual. So the point is that we can use any of these systems to attract people. But the point is you have to give that proper association, that proper understanding, so that they move, they have the opportunity to move forward. So, and we even had cases, a few devotees who they were going to one of these, you know, how you say, yoga Indian guru guys, you know, and they were asking them questions about spiritual life. And when the guru saw that, you know, they're, you know, sincerely into this, it wasn't just, you know, a question that came up, oh, Guruji, you know, like this kind of thing. It was, they were seriously inquiring about this, wanted to know. The guru directly told them, says, I can't answer these questions. You have to go to ISKCON. He says, they'll answer your questions. You know, Srila Prabhupada, he can answer your questions. Yeah. Because the Indian gurus know who they are. It's just that the point is that it's good business. It's you know, it keeps you busy. It's you know, you can pay the bills.
And also they're impressed by good disciples, like sincere students. Okay. Some of them who are very expert, they're always impressed by. It's yeah. Very rare to have a sincere person.
Yeah, it's very rare because they don't have. You know, so it's like here. So that aspect is, I've met a few devotees, they're telling about how they had, and they told them to come to ISKCON, to meet Srila Prabhupada, because this was at the time when Prabhupada was here.
Bhakti Tirth Maharaj. Bhakti Tirth Maharaj.
Bhakti Tirth Maharaj was like that?
Yeah. Mahesh Yogi.
Mahesh Yogi, okay.
He told
me. Yeah. There's not so many, but I'm saying like there's like two, maybe three stories like this. But the point is that, you know, then Krishna arranged it. Mm. So Krishna arranged that they told them this. Otherwise.
Another one. For example, if we see the person that is taking some interest in Krishna consciousness, the motive is not pure. I mean, we also don't have pure motives.
Yeah.
How much we should stress the purity of the motive or just the pure philosophy?
Means it should be mentioned. You don't have to. In other words, you only. It's just like. You're applying according to what they can digest. Right? You don't do less than what they can digest. But you don't give more. Because if you give more, they get upset. Because they're engaged in something. Like I was telling, there was that one. Musician. Then he was he you know, he was Bengali. He loved reading Chaitanya Charitamrita. Mm-hmm. You know, our Chaitanya Charitamrita. I gave him the whole set. He was he loved it. And so he would always read it and all that. And so he's there and this and that. And he was willing, you know, and he said he wanted to come visit Mayapur. And so he was, you know, he understands we're vegetarian. And he's cool with that. You know, come for the weekend, be vegetarian for the weekend. It's not a problem for them. You know, it's kind of like how you say it's like an outing or an experience. You know, you just do it. You know, it's like that. And so then, but in the conversation, because up to that point we had never really discussed the vegetarian, then I mentioned something about the importance of it. At that point he got very upset. So just don't talk that. You know, you just emphasize the hearing and chanting. And I think he would even chant japa. I think he would chant japa, he would read Chaitanya Charitamrita. But, you know, he was in, you know, no way, shape, or form a vegetarian. You know, it's like this, you know. It's Elish season, you know, so we're not going to...
Say, there is a saying in Bengali that in a Bengali feast, the most empty part is the vegetarian side of the...
Oh, yeah, no one's standing there.
No one's there.
Yeah, Bengali. So that's the thing, is you see where it is, because by him continuing the chanting, you emphasize the importance of the value of the chanting, the value of the association of the scriptures, the nice stories. You go through, you know, what stories he likes, you know, what person, and just encourage that. And then as they become purified, then they'll start to be able to appreciate. So it's just a matter of where the impurity is. But to live in our temple, they have to be vegetarian. You know, like I said, we have our standards. You know, to be an officer, to be, you know, these kind of things. You need to have standards.
It's more like believing in miracles. You know, if you chant, miracles will happen. That side of the world.
Yeah, but the thing is it does happen. That's what miracles are. Miracles are from Krishna, so.
It's always frustrating, you know, if they expect something and it doesn't happen the way they expect.
Yeah, but then the thing is it just takes time. Because the point is that then ultimately you can say about purity. Then you can talk about purity of mind, because generally they'll accept the purity of mind, purity of character, not being envious, jealous, you know, angry, you know, all these kinds of things. You start there. And then as that gets purified, then at one point you bring up, then it's, because they're looking at it that you control your senses or you don't control your senses. But when it comes up to, you know, you're bothering the animals by eating them, you know, like that, because it's all about your senses. You could eat something else, you know, but you're not. So that way it's there. But you come in from that more, you know, culture, character and qualities and those kind of things. You just... For, you know, it's individual, so you find a way to get it across. You know, but you don't let them go off into it's just this miracle. It says no, but you have to put in the effort. Miracle means it just happened. It means you put in your effort to chant purely. That's why it's happening. So then, if I'm chanting like this and that, you know, you see about the character, you see about these, and then ultimately you get to these things. You know, attachments. What attachments? You know, so.
If you devotee has pure faith in Shri Bhakti, he can attain it in Prima Bhakti. My question is about those devotees who came by self-preaching and has Mishra Bhakti. If they will also follow our process and, for example, accept Diksha Guru, which level they can reach if they will keep their motive in Mishra Bhakti?
Means if it's if they have a philosophy that their Mishra Bhakti is fine, then that they won't get past the Narta Nivriti, because they'll be unstable in there. You might see is that there may be a steadiness in performing the sadhana, right? Because they're, let's say, they're a yogi, so they have to be regulated or that. Or you're into the Ayurveda, so this coming from the medical point, that also requires regulation. Or so any of these... You have that regulation part. They may be quite regulated. So in there, they might be very steady in following that. But it's only as part of a regulatory program. And which is fine, because it's connected to Krishna. But the difficulty comes is on the mental platform, that's where it's going to be irregular.
Okay.
So you won't necessarily see that they'll be stable in this and that. Because you can take the most peaceful and stable and mature person in these kind of fields, but if you bring up a topic that they don't appreciate, they kind of lose that stability. You know, like that. They're unable to maintain. So it's the difficulty comes up is that certain areas where they apply themselves properly with that faith, then they'll progress there. But other areas where they don't, they won't. That's why you'll see, even in general, in devotees, wherever they're having the faith in the process, then they're getting a good result there. And they may be more, move up and have more steady, more taste, like this, get higher levels. But in another area where there's attachment, then they'll be on a lower level. So even on the variety of religious engagements that they have, some of them may be more in a more advanced position and some of them in a less advanced position. Does that make sense? So maybe they have, you know, chanting and kirtan and all those kind of things. They may be more absorbed and more steady in that than someone else, but at the same time, let's say when it comes to prasad, they'll be in a less mature position. You know, or someone else may be in that, but let's say to do with money or something to do with the family or something, you know, something else, you know, or politics or, you know, they're really good in all things. But you bring up politics and they get right into it. But in other areas, they're very good. You understand? So that's the point of the society of Krishna consciousness is that everyone has an advancement in some particular area. So then by associating with the devotees, there's always someone who is more advanced in the area that you're not. Mm. Does that make sense? Mm. So this idea that everyone's the same, you won't get that. Everyone's unique. Everyone's an individual. But it should be like-minded in that you can relate, you can communicate. Because the difficulty comes up is that if you don't have a basis of like-mindedness, even though you may be saying the same thing, then the difficulty is going to be there is you can't communicate. Does that make sense? Like I remember, because the language you use and your examples you use and all that are used differently. The same example for one person means one thing, for another person it means another thing. You know, it's just like, let's say we use the example of the person is from a poor background, you know, people were discriminating against him because of his background. And then, but it didn't affect him. You know, he got very serious. He got in there and he did better than everybody else and, you know, came out on top and now is a respected personality. Right? You know, they become very, you know, whatever it was in the business field or, you know, economic field or the political field or the intellectual field. And they rose up to the top and now they're respected and everything like that. So when you give that example, then for one person, they're going to look at it, yeah, there's so many troubles and all that, difficulties that come, obstacles that come in your way, but you push through them and you can get the result, despite what the situation, right? So in one sphere, you use that example like that, and it'll appreciate, it'll be inspired. Yeah, I have problems, but you know, I could just push through. But now let's say you're talking with someone else that has a different kind of a mentality approach. And you mention the same example. And they're going to get right off into the thing of, yeah, you know, society and like this and that and discrimination and all that and they're the victim and all this and what's the society doing for them. And you can't even discuss about the point how you're trying to use it, pure devotional service. Because for them is that, no, we're devotees, we should care, we should have that compassion, they're going to look at it that way. Is that, you know, a devotee has all good qualities, so therefore we have to go beyond all these things like this, and so they'll just go into that aspect. Right? So, then if you're in that group of persons, then you use this, that, you know, some of that, and so we see is that you have to help people, you have to things, so they're going to do it now. And then as devotees, they'll be inspired to, yeah, I'm selfish, you know, I should help others. While the other one is, I'm selfish, it's just about myself, but I push through and like this. So you're discussing the same thing, but the problem is how they use the example, the angle and all that, the approach is very different. So that's why Swajati, you associate with those who basically the words mean the same thing, the examples mean the same thing. Because otherwise, when you associate with those where the words mean something else, you can't have a conversation. You absolutely can't. No matter what you say, it's wrong. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole idea.
Can devotee who has, for example, test to deity worship, but can't chant japa attentively, cross anatta-nirvita level?
The point is that by doing the deity worship, then they're serving Krishna, the heart will get purified, that'll improve their chanting. And as their chanting improves, that'll improve their deity worship. So devotional service nourishes itself, it's independent. So that's the point, is if in any area of devotional service you excel, it will have effect on all others. Like someone just loves prasad. So by that, it will affect all other areas in their life, will also improve. That's the point, is it doesn't matter where you start. It will, that the nine processes are there. So even if one's perfection is in bhojanam, so it'll still work. Does that make sense?
Yeah, on the same, that's a similar point, like, everybody who comes to Krishna consciousness, just like the Mayavadis, they have their strong point, they can be situated, like, at least they can understand what is a liberated platform.
Mm-hmm.
But the Karmis have their own good point, that they can relate the energies of Krishna, how it can be dovetailed in Krishna's service.
Mm-hmm.
So we first engage them in connecting that to Krishna,
mm-hmm.
so that they get a spiritual experience, that they can get chit potency, mercy of the chit potency, then they can start relating other things also, other aspects also in that.
Yes, yes. Yes, because it's just wherever you're from, because the conditioning is not the soul. Right? Conditioning is not the soul. So, but since the soul identifies with the conditioning, then you have to use that conditioning as the medium to approach the soul. Right? So then the karma, you're going to work more within the realm of karma. You know, karma yoga. The jnana, you're going to work in jnana yoga. So then it's just a matter, but with time, everything else will come. It's just like, you start looking at the Lord from the feet and go up to the head. But then it's given that example of Kunti Devi. She would start from Krishna's waist, go to the head, down to the feet, and then back up again. So it has to be accomplished. It's just a matter of where you start. That's why it's important that we know the philosophy, we know the culture. So we know the philosophy, then we know which angle to use to talk to them, we know the culture, we know how to engage them according to their nature. And with that, then you can give direction. So that's why then, basically leadership means knowing that. You're inspired in Krishna consciousness, you're able to inspire others, but unless you know what the person is, where they're situated, how do you inspire specifically? Otherwise, you can go on inspiring and you don't know how to deal with a wide range. Those who can relate to your particular approach and presentation, they'll come forward and they'll get the advantage, though others won't. It just means your area is a little narrower. Or very specific. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
So it seems that when we came to the material world, we want to be Krishna, to want to be God, so we are all like impersonalism.
Yes.
From the art, I can say like that.
Yes, yes.
So, and since we have been many lifetimes in that condition, it's not easy to change.
No.
So how to deal with the idea to change ourselves and to help other people to change?
Basically, the common point is that if you go back to where it started, how does it start? How does it become impersonal? Right? It becomes impersonal because we're talking about ourselves. We're saying we're not interested in God, but we're interested in ourselves.
Yes.
So you could say it's personal.
Yes.
So why would we say that concept is impersonal? Right? Because Krishna is the supreme person. And when you see things in context of the Supreme Person, that's where it actually becomes personal. Because when we don't see it in the context of the Supreme Person, though we see it in the context of ourselves, which is personal, then the difficulty comes is that we're only working with God's creation and not with God.
Yes.
So we're seeing the creation in an impersonal way.
Yes.
We don't see it connected to the Lord. And so because of that, then identifying with that, we don't even actually see ourselves truly as a person.
Yes.
You know, because this thing, oh, you can be whatever you want to be. No, you can be whatever you have the nature to be.
Yes.
It means you can be the best at whatever, you can be your best in whatever area you have that nature in. Because saying that the person, he wanted to do this, but why did he want to do that? Unless it was the nature. Right? And then, if they apply themselves, then they develop their skills. But it's not that someone who doesn't have that, like, let's say, I'm taking it as being personal, that it's about the person, is that he can be whatever he wants to be. Okay, and we'll say that's a personal philosophy. Now, let us say, okay, the person's interested in, let's say, active work. Right? So then I say, no, but you can be whatever you want to be. Why waste your time active? Sit down and then you can really focus.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put them in, let's say, an office job, just sitting at a desk. They won't be happy. And that my saying, no, they can become good at this, it'll be looked at when you're not thinking of the person. It's impersonal.
Yes.
Right? The person should be able to do what he wants.
Yes.
So then you're acknowledging that there's an inherent nature, though we don't look at it so scientifically. So the point is when you say you can be whatever you want, it's you can be whatever you want within the context of what you can do.
Yes.
Or you do have the example where someone sees something and they see something in some martial arts, you know, movie and like that, they get inspired, they go down to the dojo and sign up and all that, but they have no skill. So then after some weeks and all that, then they figure out, no, I can't do this. And so then they'll give up. Because so at point, if you don't have the nature, you can't do it. You can't make something out of something that doesn't have the nature for it. But I can't make a potato salad out of, let's say, squash. You know, it has to have the nature. So that's the whole thing, is that that's being overlooked. So it's actually impersonal. Because the point is, being a person, you have a specific nature. You can function within that nature. You can't function outside that nature. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there is a need of more or less constant education about that topic.
Yes, yes.
Because if we don't... if we catch something but we don't develop pure bhakti, there is always some lacking.
Yes, yes. Because means pure bhakti is the standard. Everything less than that is less than standard. But the essential quality of pure bhakti is devotional service. So that is connected to Krishna. That's what makes it a value. So even mixed devotional service is a value because of its connection to Krishna. The mix is not important. It's the pure service is important. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you have water and there's impurities in the water. The water is still of value. You just have to remove the impurities. Does that make sense? Like that. So one has to be able to distinguish of what's of value, what's not. So saying that, oh, it's impure, so therefore the whole thing's thrown out. Then that's one thing. The other is, no, but water's pure and all that, so even if things, it doesn't matter. But the point is, no, water is pure, but there's impurities. Remove the impurities, then the impure water will remain. Does that make sense? Okay. Within the body of Mahavishnu reside clusters of millions of universes composed of three planetary systems. By the Lord's senses, the action and knowledge senses of the jivas arise. From his expansion, Antaryami, the knowledge of the jiva arises. From his prana, the physical and sensual strength and action of the jivas arise. He is the final cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction through the three gunas. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.4.4. So we see is by the Lord's senses, action and knowledge, by the Lord's senses, then the knowledge and action senses of the jiva are coming up, right? Then as Paramatma, his expansion there, then the knowledge of the jiva arises. Right? Because there's knowledge of what's going on. You have to have knowledge of something to how it functions and everything like that, right? Then it's that, so that's coming from the Lord there. Because the Krishna, the point is, it's the relationship. You have to have knowledge to interact in the relationship. You know? You understand? So it's the point is that knowledge is used for the elements engaged in expression in the relationship, and not the relationship. You like somebody because you like somebody, not because of knowledge.
Yes, yes.
Knowledge is used in how to do something. Let's say you want to go somewhere, so you use the knowledge of driving the car in the relationship to, you know, you want to go for a drive. You know, you want to spend some time with the person, so going for a drive is one way you can spend time with the person. So you use the knowledge and skill of driving in support of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's then Antayami. That's where the knowledge comes up there. That's why this whole emphasis on knowledge and skills is a lesser degree than Bhagavan, which is just the natural attraction. Right? So we have to understand this pure devotional service stands on its own without knowledge and skills. Right? It's whatever knowledge and skills we have, we engage in the Lord's service. And because we're doing it for the Lord, naturally we'll improve the quality of our knowledge and skills. But it doesn't mean that the knowledge and skills produces bhakti. Then that's mundane. That's not understanding the independent quality of bhakti. Yes.
Paramatma is controller, and through him we get jnana shakti. So can we think that we appreciate and we want to get jnana shakti because of our desire to be controller?
I mean, if we have knowledge, then we think we can control something, because only if you can control it can you enjoy it, right? Does that make sense? Let us say there's a samosa. Okay? Can you enjoy that samosa if it's not in your hand and you can eat it? Right? So it's just, so even you get it, and then you put it in your bag, but then there's so many people around, so you can't eat it, that at least you're in control of it. There's the potential that you could enjoy. So this emphasis on being the controller and enjoyer, or the knowledge and skills, then makes it that you have the potential you could enjoy. They don't talk about enjoying. At these self-help seminars, so they talk about enjoying. How can you enjoy? They're only talking about they can't say that you'll enjoy. But because there's the illusion that if I control it, I can enjoy it, therefore, then people will go for it. So this emphasis on that, yes, so the Lord has the shaktis. And we learn knowledge of the shaktis so we can control them. Fine. That's that aspect. But the point is then what are we going to use that knowledge and skill in controlling that object for? What's the purpose of that? So unless it's to please Krishna, then it's not bhakti. Right? It may be, okay, but by that I can make money. Okay. So if the money is not for Krishna, then it's not bhakti. So I'm learning that thing to get money. So learning the thing itself is not bhakti because it's not about Krishna. Then, but that'll get you money. So you can say, now we look at, okay, then what's the money for? You know, oh, that's not for Krishna, that's for maintaining the family. Okay, so then that's also, you know, like that. But in maintaining the family, is that about Krishna? You know, so you just keep going till at what point it gets to Krishna. And so then they have to connect that to Krishna, and then that will come back to, you know, then the family, and that connected to Krishna, and then they'll see the money connected to Krishna, and then they'll see the activities that generate the money, then they'll see the knowledge and skills that's connected to Krishna. You know, it just comes backwards. But you start, where is the end? Because Krishna is the ultimate goal, you know, of all goals. So wherever is your last goal, that should be connected to Krishna. even if you can't see how any of the other ones before that connect.
But this is our value system.
Yes.
It means if the value is still Krishna, it's okay.
Yes, that's the point. That's why this mixed devotional service still works, because it connects Krishna. Because Krishna is what makes it work, not the activity itself, not the piety. Piety is just the medium. You, just like if I want to cook, what do I use? I use proper edible ingredients. Right? Like you see the little kids out in the backyard. Right? They're cooking. But they're not using edible ingredients. They're just things that look interesting and nice color, and some leaf that looks nice, and you know, this and that, pick up this and that. And so the point is that you're using a medium of edible ingredients. So the point is that since Krishna is piety and serving him is the ultimate piety, then naturally piety as the ingredient would be used. But it's not that piety itself is what's important. It's that it's the ingredient you'd use. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is that we're not saying that that's what defines it. Just like if we're cooking, we want to make a particular prep. Those ingredients are what's important. Other ingredients aren't important. Like if it says use baking powder, then baking soda isn't important. They can say, why are you not using that? It also makes it. Yes, but for this, you just use it. So the bhakti, the piety itself is only of value because of the preparation, which is to serve Krishna. So that's why it's there, because it's an appropriate engagement. Impiety simply means what's against what is Krishna's interest. Piety means what's in line with Krishna's interest. But it's called piety and impiety because people aren't seeing it in context of Krishna. Right? They don't see it connected to Krishna. So because of that, it's called piety. Does that make sense? But I see it in context of that, then I'll say it according to that. You know, it's just like, let us say, someone does activity that produces money. Okay? So that activity, you know, is you know, engagement of the senses, right? And so specifically, that's work, right? That which makes you money is your work or your occupation, right? But it's also an engagement of the senses. Does that make sense? Yeah. Now let us say, okay, we call it work. Now, I don't see it in connection with any particular occupation itself. So it's just, you do work, you get money. But then you look at it, oh, the person works, let's say, at the post office. So he does postal service. Right? We don't have to mention the money part. Because it's understand, you work at the post office, you're going to get money. But otherwise, you know, you're just going to say, do you have a job? You know, do you work? You know, cause, why? Because you get money. You understand? So bhakti, it already includes the work and the results of the work. So you just have to call it bhakti, because the important thing is it's about Krishna. Because we're taking it that it's just a sentiment. Because look at it, you know, if we're looking at it just in general. If we're looking at any of the, and you know, the world religions, what work do they do for God?
They pray.
They pray. But praying for what?
To get something.
Yeah, to get something. You know. So generally that's what you'll see. So very rarely it's outside of that. So the point is they're not doing it in their religious sentiment. It's just an attitude. It's a sentiment. It's not actual doing practical work to please God.
Yes.
Right? They just don't do anything bad, and God's happy that you didn't make any trouble. You know, it's just like if you had, you know, you had to go someplace with the kids, and that you're just happy that the kids didn't make any trouble.
Yeah.
You know? But it's not necessarily a positive thing, you're just happy that nothing negative happened. So they're taking that as the high standard, but that's not. You know, because what? If the kids went out with the parents, they went someplace, they didn't make any trouble, then there's a good chance after that they may get some candy or some ice cream. Yes. You know, so that's you could say your contemporary religion. Be good and you'll get something. Yes. Right? But it's not that you're working for the Lord. Yes. You're seeing everything you're doing in context of the Lord, and therefore in that connection you're doing. Someone's seeing that, that's a higher level of understanding. So that's rare. Most people are just doing because they don't make trouble, they'll get benefit. So you're putting more emphasis on avoiding sin and being pious and all, because that's all the more that they're dealing with. But if you're dealing with the person, you want to please the person, therefore that's why you're going to behave yourself. It means they're behaving themselves just because they're supposed to, and afterwards if they behave themselves, they'll get an ice cream. You know, if you guys sit here peacefully and don't make any trouble, then after we finish here, you know, in 20 minutes, we'll go buy an ice cream. So then they sit there as good as they can. You know, they're still going to pinch and poke each other, but, you know, hopefully no one cries. Right? So, but if you want to please the parents, then that's why you're going to behave yourself. So in other words, pleasing the parents already includes behaving yourself and getting an ice cream. You don't, you just say you're working for that, and it automatically includes the other. You understand? But when you leave that personal aspect out, that's where you have to say piety and impiety and that. So some people emphasize the pious element, and they're not so, they don't overemphasize the impious. It's just something you don't do. So if someone does something wrong, they tell them to do something right. But you'll find most people emphasize the impiety. So if they've done something wrong, then they're the punishment, and that's this, and that's the end of the world, and... You know, it's nothing you can do to get rid of the taint of the sin, and you know, like this kind of thing. Yeah. Like that. So the whole point is you're talking about these levels in consciousness, how it can improve. You know? Yes.
I have a question about how to use money for Krishna.
How to?
Use money for Krishna.
Use money for Krishna.
When I was in a hospital, I lost a lot of money for treatment, and the devotee in our country, they collected money and donated me. I wrote it them that I can't accept this money because I am the pastor. But they thought that in this case I separate my body and I thought that I will donate this money to Krishna. They wrote me that if I will do it, it means that I don't consider my body and health belong to Krishna. And how to understand on our level of consciousness?
Means the point is they're giving it as friends and this and that, no? Yeah. Well wishers and that, but they're giving. So they just want that your family life goes nicely in connection with Krishna. And so if then if you expend all your money on the medical things, they want to help and support in that way, then as friends and well wishers, then it can work because it's an emergency thing. It's not how you make your money. You know, if you are, then you have to be engaged in, you know, brahminical activities. Because the point is, Brahman can accept charity. So then what's the problem? Even as a grihastha. Right? Brahmins go out begging or accepting charity and things like that. So it's not a problem. Others, then, they generally avoid because there's that concept that I'm doing this and I'm getting my results. So therefore, then they have to do things to get the result. Otherwise, they may become lazy. Right? And if it's well wishes, then they take care. They give things and this and that.
I thought that we can accept donations only if we have ability to digest karma of people, and if we can have so purity to not consider ourselves as body.
The point is that it's just like our children accepting charity.
Overtime.
All the time. I thought you said overtime means it. Also. You know, the point is that it's people, it's not an occupation. You can't do it as an occupation. But this is an emergency. You're sick, people are trying to take care. They're being nice. It's this, as devotees, they're being kind. So it's not a bad thing. Yes, so don't worry about that.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.